Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, when I was dead broke, man, I couldn't picture this.
It was all a dream. I used to read Word Up magazine. Salt and pepper and Heavy D up in the limousine. Hanging pictures on my wall. Every Saturday, Rap Attack, Mr. Magic, Molly Mall.
And welcome to February 1995.
Phone bill about 2G's flat. No need to worry, my accountant handles that. My whole crew is lounging, celebrating every day. No more public housing.
What's it been since you moved out of the projects, Matthew? How's it been?
It has been a cultural shock.
Really? What's the biggest change? Is it the quality of food?
Endo for weeks. That's been the biggest change.
And
sold out seats to hear me talk about the 94-95 Utah Jazz.
Well, there's always a place for that. Oh yeah, you want to start with the Jazz? Jazz fucking tearing it up. Are they number one in the West right now?
I think Phoenix is still number one.
Okay.
But the Utah Jazz
have been making a push led by Karl Malone.
Yeah, Karl Malone, another great season. John Stockton, another great season. His stats are a little down again this year.
The ghosts of Mark Eaton are fading away.
Yeah, the embers of Mark Eaton, the world's tallest auto mechanic, has left Salt Lake City. But it's still a very veteran-oriented team with Stockton, Malone, Horny, Jeff Hornacek, Jay Humphries.
Jerry Sloan likes to call him Horny.
Jerry Sloan is a solid coach, it seems, old school coach, former Bull. I don't know. I mean, it's like...
How many Bulls jerseys are in the rafters? We have Sloan, and we have... That's it. Is that correct? Anyone else?
What about...
Love has not been retired yet. Let me correct that. I believe that Sloan is currently the only jersey circa 1995 that is up there.
Really?
I think he might be. Or no one. Maybe there's nobody. Maybe we'll look into this.
What about Quinn and Daly?
Quentin Daly is not been retired yet. We're going to look for that in a few years. He'll be next to Dave Corzine's jersey.
Yeah. They should retire the jerseys of the 83-84 Bulls for being bad enough to...
I agree. There are so many...
the Bulls to draft Michael Jordan.
Awful memories associated with so many of those players that they really should retire them so I never have to... freak out.
Do you know, like, how many women's groups protested outside of Bulls games in 82, 83? Like, six or seven. Because of Quentin Daly. Because Quentin Daly was a rookie on the team, though.
Really? Do you want to tell a quick Quentin Daly story? Because I think I'd like to hear it.
Alright, so let's go back in a time machine to 1982. Quentin Daly is... I'm not quite sure how exactly this all went down.
Where'd he go to school?
University of San Francisco. And
it's a nice school. It's very pretty.
I don't quite have my facts totally right. Here's what I do know for sure is that Quentin Daly was
a rapist.
Yeah, accused of rape and I think convicted of some sexual assault charge. And the Bulls drafted Daly knowing full well that he was accused of raping a woman in a University of San Francisco dorm room.
Was this still Jerry Krause at the time, making the selections?
No, this was before Krause. I mean, this was a while ago. This was 1982. And... So my understanding is that the Bulls knew full well about this and still drafted Quentin Daly. This was a pretty freaking... big deal. Groups protested outside the old Chicago Stadium.
Who's currently the biggest rapist in the NBA?
Well, in terms of
rapiness.
In terms of... Luckily, I don't think we live in a league right now where there are players that have...
Is this a rape-free league currently?
...convicted of sexual assault. I think that that's maybe a sign of progress. Quentin Daly, by the way, entered a drug rehabilitation center for a while. But then he cleaned up, and I think... I don't know. To answer your brutal question, I don't think that there's any person that I can think of, luckily, who has been convicted of sexual assault.
NBA rape-free since, I mean, for years now, then,
it's
right?
It's a fun-loving league. I mean, basically, the highest sexual crime that I can think of off the top of my head is now retired Laker James Worthy being arrested for soliciting two prostitutes in Houston, prompting Peter Vesey to write in his New York Post column, "James always had trouble scoring against double teams."
And I mean, he's James Worthy. The prostitutes probably solicited him. I mean, Worthy always
had good luck. He played with Michael Jordan in college for North Carolina, played with Magic Johnson with the Lakers. He had that great L.A. Law poster in the 1980s. Anyway, this brings us to our current topic of the Utah Jazz. And the Jazz are, again, like every year, they're sort of like, maybe Utah, maybe not. I don't know. I mean, I think it's a wide open West. I think Phoenix has a lot of questions. Danny Manning just got injured. We don't know how serious it is, but it looks like he could be out for the year, and that really opens up the West.
I still like the Suns without Manning more than I like the Jazz.
I mean, when you're looking at sort of the professional basketball landscape in 1995, I mean, the teams with the best record right now are Phoenix, you know, an offensive-oriented team, a collection of offensive talent, and one of those great offensive players, Manning, is now injured. Two of those other great players, Barkley and Kevin Johnson, also have injury problems. Then you have Orlando in the East, which we'll be getting to in a moment. And Orlando is, of course, very inexperienced. So the gist of all this is that there's an opening this year, and Utah, you know, they've made the conference finals two of the last 3 years. Maybe they could, seize this opportunity.
Who else is on your radar this year, Matthew? Who's gonna give me your updated conference finals prediction for the West?
Well, for the West, mm-hmm. I mean, I think that, I think that Seattle's doing well. I'm not quite sure what they're doing differently than last year. I think Utah's doing very well. San Antonio is getting better. Their new additions are sort of blending in.
Sean Elliott,
back, and you know, he's kind of like that year in Detroit was sort of just like, you know, I don't know if it's a furlough year, a sort of pass year, but like, he's sort of back where he was in 92-93, this year 94-95, and also Avery Johnson, the same situation. Johnson, a key piece of the 93 Spurs team that made the second round of the playoffs, he's now back, doing well for San Antonio. The way Utah's playing, I would have to say that I like Utah. I like the addition, you know, laugh if you want, of Feldon Spencer at center. And, you know, it's a wide open league. I like Utah in the conference finals now. I still have my questions about Phoenix, but
I'm going to go Suns Spurs. That's my prediction right now.
I'm going to go with Utah-Seattle because I just have some questions.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with Seattle whatsoever. I mean, Seattle's looked really, really good. Gary Payton
just keeps getting better and better.
Yeah.
You know? And Detlef Schrempf also is arguably having a career year.
So. Is he going to be an all-star this year, do you think, on the bench?
Certainly. He certainly deserves to be. I mean, Seattle may be the only team in the league that I think, you know, clearly deserves three all-stars with Payton, Schrempf, and Sean Kemp.
Agreed. All right, Matthew. On the cover of Sports Illustrated this mm-hmm. week,
right?
Penny Hardaway, Penny's from heaven.
Penny from heaven. Crowed the Sports
because
Illustrated
I don't need
cover.
It. I mean, I was going to ask you who's going to come out of the East, but it's pretty fucking obvious. It is the Orlando Magic, who are just still rolling over everyone.
What do you think it's obvious?
I think it's obvious, yeah.
I think it was a good like I think it was like a necessary thing for the magazine after like the issue from like 2 weeks ago where it was like, Look at all these young black stars that complain about everything and are spoiled brats, with Derek Coleman on the cover crying. And so I felt it was probably necessary for them to, like, 2 weeks later, like, put a young black star on the cover who, you know, is maybe more positive. You know, they found one in Hardaway who, you know, is playing incredibly in Orlando right now, really setting the tone for that team, the highest scoring team in the NBA.
If you had to start a team right now, would you rather have Shaq or would you rather have Penny?
I mean, I'd rather have Shaq, but in a way, I would say, I mean, Shaq is
this is even
up
a conversation
numbers.
We could have. It's
I know.
Incredible.
It is amazing. It is amazing. It's amazing because just, you know, a year and a half ago, I feel like most people were saying Orlando made a big mistake trading Chris Webber for the rights to Chris Webber for the rights to Penny Hardaway. And
I most certainly
picks.
Was, yes.
And, you know, people were crying about this. And now, since, you know, they didn't select Webber, instead of having Webber at power forward, they have Horace Grant now at power forward, who's fit in, you know, perfectly with the team. They have the best starting five of the league with Hardaway, Grant, O'Neal, Dennis Scott, and Nick Anderson. I think
Dennis Scott has also been phenomenal this year.
Dennis Scott, you know, people call him fat. People,
he's got a shot.
You know,
he's
one dimensional, but that one dimension is just what Orlando needs.
Right.
Is because Penny and Shaq both draw a lot of double teams and create a lot of situations for open shots for the other players, and so Scott is actually. At this point, is actually now suited perfectly. Maybe he, you know, he's not the star some people thought he would be out of Georgia Tech, but he's a good complementary player for Orlando.
Back to the article. Go for it.
Anyway, Penny Hardaway, the article, sort of the interesting tale of Penny Hardaway, you know, a high school phenom in Memphis at Treadwell High, but he also had to overcome, you know, a lot of adversity, a tough childhood in Memphis. He was a Proposition 48, one of the most high-profile Prop 48s ever, which means that you score below 700 composite on your SAT or fail, like, achieve some grade point average or something.
That's bad.
That's really bad. anyway, like, he was paraded All-Americans, like, High School Player of the Year. He chooses to stay home and play for Memphis State, and that's, like, big deal, because Memphis State's, like, a big program and stuff, but, like, you know, he could have gone anywhere. But he's also, like, Prop 48'd, and then, like, after he was Prop 48'd, he got shot. Victim of a stick-up, of the just, like, sort of a street, I shouldn't say a stick-up, a street mugging, and, like, he gets shot.
So, going to school near home, he kind of shot himself in the foot, figuratively.
He actually was literally, he did not shoot himself in the foot, but, A criminal shot him in the foot, but he was shot in the foot. Yes, he was shot in the foot. And so, anyway, he turns into a Dean's List student at Memphis State. I believe his major was communications. He becomes a great All-American basketball player, probably the most exciting basketball players of, like, the early 90s, sort of Kenny Anderson. Then after Kenny Anderson, I would say Penny Hardaway. Super exciting college player. And so, like, in the pros, he's just taken off. Like, at the start, I mean, you know, people thought, wow, he was really good in college. He has star potential. But there are a lot of doubters. We mentioned the Webber thing. A lot of Orlando fans wanted Scott Skiles still to be the point guard. And
because he never had any problems, you know,
right,
in college.
Because Scott Skiles was... I'm
glad that we brought up Scott Skiles' cocaine addiction on every podcast that we've done to this point.
The man wasn't addicted to cocaine. He was addicted to a good time in college. And,
yeah, nothing like good times in Lansing.
I mean, it led to some trouble. You know, he's looking for a good time in Lansing. Sometimes you have to do extraordinary things to do that, and he did. And so, I mean, now Skiles is exiled to the Washington Bullets, and the team with Chris Webber, who's injured right now.
Having some problems, the Bullets.
Bullets having a lot of problems. Don McLean, not the superstar juggernaut player that we had first thought.
It's a shame.
Kevin Duckworth continues to disappoint. Meanwhile, back in Orlando, the Magic look really good. And even with the experience that the Pacers and Knicks have, I think most people, you know, are picking the Magic right now to win the East.
Yeah, I don't think there's... I mean, I don't know what the odds would be. It'd probably be like 2-1, 50-50, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I mean, Pacers are still looking good. Rick Smith is having another good year.
If you had to choose between the Field, everyone, or the Magic, who would you take right now?
I'd take the Field.
Okay.
Because just of the Magic's... They've never won a playoff game yet, you know? They've never won a playoff game.
That's true, but it is still really wide open.
What is wrong with the Chicago Bulls?
I can tell you what's wrong with the Bulls. They don't have Horace Grant, and they don't have Michael Jordan, and that's a problem.
So they lose Jordan last year, and they, only lose, two more games the whole regular season, and almost, get through the East, worn for some shitty Hugh Hollins officiating Eastern Conference
semifinals. Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Anyway...
It's terrible.
So it's the Bulls can survive anything, but they can't survive the free agent departure of Horace Grant. And they're listless right now.
About 500? Are they a little bit below right now?
They are, I believe right now, 23-23.
Ouch.
Which puts them, slightly...
Sixth seed?
I believe the Hawks are ahead of them now. I believe they're the seventh seed in the East. The East is not very deep this year, so it would be hard for the Bulls to entirely miss the playoffs.
But they could get eviscerated by the Magic in the first round in four games.
They could. I mean, it looks
Horace
like...
Horace Grant is out for revenge.
Yeah, Horace Grant and his goggles are out for revenge. In any case, it seems more likely they'll get killed by the Knicks or the Pacers in the 2-7 or 3-6 matchups.
Right. And the thing is, Michael Jordan is currently playing baseball at this mm-hmm. moment.
Right. And Scottie Pippen does everything for the Bulls.
Michael Jordan with the Birmingham Barons in AA.
He is, this is, financial-wise, this has to be good for... the Birmingham Barons.
It certainly is. I saw Michael Jordan at the spring training at Sarasota with the White Sox.
Mm-hmm.
I saw him not play but run, and that was still exciting.
Yeah,
it was sold out. He has a home run now.
He did. He hit a home run.
He did. He That's hit amazing. A home run. He's batting around 200, okay. And this leads to this feature. Matthew, do you want to invent a song for this called Michael Jordan's Top 10? Things.
Michael Jordan's top 10 things. Greatest basketball player ever. So great. Maybe. He makes me sing. Michael Jordan, he's accomplished amazing things. But what are the most
amazing
things?
Okay, that's enough, Matthew. Thank you. Thank you. That was great. We're going to go. I'm going to give you first choice. What is Michael Jordan's greatest accomplishment? Number one.
I think that Michael Jordan's greatest accomplishment ever was when he, I think when he prevented Isaiah Thomas from being on the original Dream Team.
Oh, wow, that's a good one. Give a little backstory of that. That's really good. I wouldn't have picked that, but that is really good.
So, Michael Jordan, obviously... You know, arguably the greatest player ever. I think the greatest player ever.
Arguably.
Some might say Bill Russell.
Some might.
He just comes off winning his first NBA title, and they select the first original Dream Team.
Well, you need to go back to the All-Star game.
All right, we'll go back to the All-Star game.
Isaiah blocked Michael Jordan. What year was this? 85.
Jordan's rookie year.
They froze out Jordan during an All-Star game.
Yeah.
Like, the player who should have had the ball the entire time, Isaiah Thomas, and others conspired, but specifically Isaiah Thomas, to not get Jordan the ball.
Apparently George Gervin was part of this conspiracy.
What? How is George Gervin part of anything?
It doesn't make any sense at all. Because even if Gervin may have been voted on by the fans like an old-timer, that All-Star team, but even then he would have been on the Western Conference.
Okay.
So this is very confusing. I don't understand.
He was the Gary Payton of the All-Star game.
I don't mean to model this already somewhat complex segment further, but George Gervin apparently was part of the freeze of Michael Jordan. The Iceman, part of the freeze of Michael Jordan in 1985. Anyway, so Isaiah Thomas and I guess a couple of other stars were sort of jealous of the super attention Jordan had received. They froze him out in the game, didn't pass him the ball. This started the rivalry between Jordan and Thomas. Thomas was sort of throughout his career envious of Jordan for, not only sort of Jordan's kind of general attention and stardom that Thomas, did not receive the level of attention that Jordan got, but also
that the Pistons kicked the shit out of him in the playoffs.
The Pistons 3 years in a row kicked the shit out of them in the playoffs, but even then, Jordan was the prince of Chicago, and this upset Thomas, who of course Chicago grew up in Chicago. And so Thomas, is always, they've always had a hate, they've always super competitive people.
But the dream team with Chuck Daly as the coach somehow managed to find a way to not have Isaiah Thomas on it. Which was Michael Jordan's decision.
This was not strictly, if it were strictly literally the 12 best players of 1991.
It might not have had Christian Laettner on it.
It wouldn't have Christian Laettner on it. You can make a case for not having Thomas on it, but I mean, it was a lifetime award. Larry Bird was on this team.
Right. Bird started on that team.
Yeah, and so it was obviously an indebtedness to the way that Bird had, made the NBA so much more popular, and to a lesser extent, Thomas did the same, and Thomas was the best player on two very memorable and very great championship teams, and it was outrageous that players such as John Stockton and Chris Mullin, great players, but not as great as Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah, I'm gonna take Thomas over Chris Mullin, and I love Chris Mullin.
But these were the Clyde Drexler made it over Isaiah Thomas. I mean, the fact that Jordan has so much influence over American basketball that he could tell the selection committee for the U.S. Olympic team, don't put Thomas on the team. To me, that shows the amazing power and control that Jordan has wielded over basketball.
That's an exceptional choice, Matthew, and I can't argue. Number two. On the top 10 Michael Jordan, we might not make it to 10 because this might be really long. But number two, I will select the second championship.
The second championship?
I will select the second championship, which was incredible. I mean, the personal things were overcome and how much that meant to him. The shrug game, how many threes did he hit in a row?
Okay, the shrug game, I think he hits six threes in the first half.
Six threes in the first half. That is my choice for number two on the Michael Jordan top 10. Number three, Matthew, go.
Okay, so we have keeping Isaiah Thomas on the 92 Olympic team, the shrug game where he makes Clyde Drexler. Both of these things have so far involved the inadequacies of Clyde Drexler. Number three is 63 points against the Boston Celtics in Game 2.
And a losing effort, correct?
In a losing effort, double overtime. Some revisionist basketball historians have said over the years that this is an overrated performance. He took so many shots. He took 41 shots. He was 22 for 41.
And there was a lot of time with the overtimes.
There were two times with the overtime. He had just scored 49 points in game one, so 63 and two overtimes. That's not that much more impressive.
Did the crowd at any point turn and start cheering for Jordan?
No, at no point did the crowd do this. But let's further consider the context, because when you do that, it does show up as one of the greatest, if not the greatest, single game performances ever. Jordan was playing against arguably the greatest team of all time, the 86 Celtics, and he was scoring at will. You know, this wasn't, you know, so it wasn't Charles Barkley scoring 56 against the Golden State Warriors last year. This was Jordan scoring against Dennis Johnson, Kevin McHale, you know, the great Celtics with the great defensive team.
He owned that
game. And he owned that game, and he was, and his teammates were horrible.
Awful.
Just awful.
Was Dave Corzine involved in this
game? Dave Corzine was probably involved in this game. I believe that Sidney Green was the second leading scorer on the Bulls that day.
Oh my god.
I mean, this was a dog meat team. I mean, Orlando Woolridge, actually Woolridge was probably the second leading scorer on that team. Orlando Woolridge, the Bulls had to hold their nose and depend on Woolridge for 18 to 20 points a game on this team. This was a really bad team. Hold their nose, pun intended, with Woolridge. So that to me is amazing that he kept it going against the Celtics. I mean, there are two sort of mitigating factors. The Celtics were such an arrogant team that year that they refused to double-team Jordan. And a second mitigating factor was that Dennis Johnson did get into foul trouble, so Danny Ainge had to defend Jordan for a lot of the game. But Ainge was still a good defender.
Yeah, he's given Jordan problems in the past.
This was a young Jordan. This sort of cemented, Larry Bird said after the game, that was God disguised as Michael Jordan. I really do think that game cemented Jordan as, you know, a once-in-a-lifetime player.
Number four on our list is Jordan's insane layup against the Lakers.
Yeah, the Lakers.
That layup. That's number four. That's the most insane thing I've ever seen a human being do.
Marv Albert says, a spectacular move.
A spectacular move! I remember watching that at my grandpa's house during that game, and it just blew my mind. I had never seen anything like that. I will never see anything like that again. That was the convalescence of will and physical ability that will never exist again. That is number four.
Number four, the Jordan reverse layup. All right, number five is Jordan's entire 88-89 season, in which he averaged 32 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, and
all right,
shot 53%. That
should have been higher, probably. It took us a while to get to that. But the greatest individual season of basketball history.
During the middle of the season, Bulls coach Doug Collins was like, we have no other good players other than, you know, the young and developing Pippen and Horace Grant. Jordan, you have to play point guard. So Jordan plays point guard, and he gets like five straight, literally five straight triple doubles. this was an amazing season. The Bulls finished sixth in the East. Again, they have no one else on their team.
Pippen did not have a good year.
Pippen. This was a young Pippen. He averaged about 14 a game. Sam Vincent, I believe, was playing point guard.
Correct.
You know,
Brad Sellers was he?
Brad
on the team?
Sellers was getting major minutes. Dave Corzine was getting major minutes. You know, this was not, you know, this was not, you know, the 86 Celtics, folks. And Jordan not only carries him through the regular season, by the way, he doesn't win MVP that year. Magic Johnson wins MVP. Jordan carries them through the regular season. And then in the playoffs, he beats a 57-win Cleveland Cavalier team that had like three or four All-Stars on that team. This was Ron Harper before Ron Harper was ever injured. Price before Price was ever injured. This was a great Cavs team.
Cavs. I mean, the shot, which, can we lump this into this so I don't choose it next?
Okay.
The shot plus that season.
The shot against the Cavs. Bulls are down by 1 point. With 3 seconds left, the Cavs inexplicably single cover Jordan with Craig Elo. Jordan hits...
Poor Elo. It wasn't even bad defense on Elo's
part. Elo slips, Jordan hits a jumper right at the free throw line. I mean, that was an amazing Cleveland Cavalier team. And Jordan basically...
They were, and he ruined them.
Single-handedly ruined that team.
Craig Elo.
You know, again, and then the next round, he beats a very good young Knicks team. He drags that team to the conference finals before they lose to the 89 Pistons, merely one of the five or six greatest teams ever.
Okay.
I mean, Jordan's and that 89 Bulls team is the only team that beat the 89 Pistons team in the playoffs. The 89 Pistons swept every other series in the playoffs except against the Bulls that year. The whole 88-89 season.
What team is the closest comp currently, would you say, to that Bulls team? Dominated by one player.
Dominated, right, by one great player, right. You know, there's nothing quite like that anymore. I mean, maybe the Bulls now with Pippen, you know, he dominates the Bulls now.
Yeah, it is still the Bulls. Even though they're playing like shit right now. But last year, I mean, that still is a comp. Which says a lot for Pippen, except that they suck this year.
I mean, I suppose the way David Robinson... I mean, but even David Robinson is more help right now.
Right, with Sean Elliott.
There's no great perimeter player right now. You know, Jordan... There's no Jordan. There's no new Jordan on the horizon, that's for sure.
All right, number six. My pick. I will take the NCAA championship.
Jordan, as a freshman.
That's my pick. Seven, Matthew.
We're counting down Michael Jordan's most amazing things ever. Number seven, the 1984 Olympic trials. Dean Smith's system at North Carolina had confined Jordan's. Smith, slow down, share the ball. Team system meant that the most points Jordan ever averaged in a season in North Carolina was 20. So people knew Jordan was great. They never knew how great he was, maybe until the Olympic trials, when Jordan just, like, obliterated everyone at the Olympic trials, and everyone, you know, included, you know, future pros like Chris Mullin. And Bobby Knight was the coach of the 1984 Olympic team. And Bobby Knight was good friends with Stu Inman. Stu Inman was the general manager of the Portland Trailblazers. And the Portland Trailblazers had the number 2 overall pick in the upcoming NBA draft.
Sam Bowie.
And it was pretty much decided that with number 1 overall pick, the Houston Rockets were going to take sure thing center Akeem Olajuwon from the University of Houston.
Akeem with an A.
Akeem with an A, exactly. And so the number 2 overall pick, it was either between Sam Bowie, a talented but injury-riddled center from Kentucky, or the sensational Michael Jordan. And Knight said, you know, to his friend Stu Inman, the general manager of Portland, you absolutely have to take Jordan. He's fucking killing everyone. And Stu Inman was like,
I got Clyde Drexler.
And Stu Inman was like, well, we need a center. And Knight just explodes at Inman and says, play him at fucking center, then. Bobby Knight was right. And Jordan's performance in the Olympic trials and the subsequent Olympic Games sort of showed to everyone that he was, you know, even greater than Dr. J, sort of a perimeter player that no one had ever seen before.
Good choice. I'm on number 8.
Yeah.
I'm taking the baseball. I'm taking this. People are talking
shit
about...
But he's doing so badly, right?
He's not doing so badly. Hitting 200 in double A, I mean, he's got a home run, is, for a human being to do that, especially his stature, is an impossible thing to accomplish.
Okay, let's say, like, that I was, like, a varsity baseball player at, like, a big high school. Like, a Division I Illinois high school. I was a varsity high school baseball player.
Okay.
And I hit, like, you know, I was good. I wasn't, like, good enough to play into college, but I hit, like...
You didn't even get a scholarship to college?
I did not get a scholarship to
college. Double A, you would hit zero.
I would hit zero.
You would hit maybe 057. Like, you would hit the ball, and maybe if you were fast... You could run out some of these, and there might be some things that were errors. They would score as base hits. You would hit zero. You wouldn't even make it close to Double A. You would never play there for any reason. And that this is viewed as a gimmick, it's not a gimmick for him. And I like that he really likes baseball.
So let's figure out, like, how good Jordan is at baseball. Like, let's say that, like, I played Big Ten baseball, and I hit 280 in Big Ten baseball. What would that put me in, like, Double A, Birmingham Barons?
Where would that put you at Double A? It would probably not put you on the roster.
Okay.
I mean, there aren't a ton of Big Ten
so
players.
Double A is that much better than
yes,
major
it's substantially college better.
Okay.
I mean, if you took like great teams like the Michigan teams of the '80s that had Jim Abbott, who could find a way on this list, the one arm pitcher for the Michigan Wolverines.
He is amazing.
He is amazing.
California Angels All Star, right?
Yeah.
Jim Abbott. Yeah.
He's yet to get his first hit, I think, but he's working towards it.
Doesn't he play in the AL?
He does play in the AL, he's going to get that hit eventually, I got a feeling. Somehow, some way, Jim Abbott needs to get that hit. He had hits in college. I would say that Jim Abbott would bat better than you in Double A. And what Michael Jordan has done has been absolutely phenomenal. To be able to play at the level he's played, not picking up a bat for what, it's been 10 years?
Oh, more than 10 years. I mean, Jordan is, like, 31 now. I mean...
Yeah, that's a long time to not play baseball.
He played high school baseball, right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
It's incredible. That's my number 8. Matthew?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I guess it is incredible. So, my number 9, the most amazing things Michael Jordan has ever done, was getting his own sneaker straight out of college.
Oh. Has there anyone else ever done that?
Well, now, but no one else before him.
Before him, no one else.
I don't think anyone's.
How big was his Nike deal initially?
It was bigger than his contract with the Bulls, but I don't know how big it was. I think it was like $2 million.
Was he the first player to have an endorsement that was bigger than his actual contract?
It's a good question. That's a question I'd be interested in knowing the answer to. I don't know the answer to it. I would say, I would guess yes.
I would guess yes as well.
Magic, Bird, Dr. J, all had probably fairly lucrative deals with Converse, but no sneaker company invested as much into a celebrity athlete as Nike did with Jordan. No one before. Now, of course, it's left and right. Now it's, you know, Fila gives Jamal Mashburn and Grant Hill their own sneakers before they even play.
Mashburn took in a very serious check. I mean, he is playing up to it, but...
Yeah. I mean, we haven't heard about Fila since, you know, 1986 rap songs, and Mashburn is trying to...
That's true. That's all right. Mashburn, I thought, was a good investment for him. I like Mashburn.
You like Mashburn?
Sure. Kentucky,
he's doing well this year. He's doing well this year.
All right. For number 10, Michael Jordan in his final game before he left against the Suns.
Describe again what happens in that game.
Well, Paxson hits a last shot, but what else happens in that game, Matthew?
Well, Jordan scores every point in the fourth quarter. The Bulls can find nothing offensively. It looks like the Suns are going to win the game behind the Suns' much more diversified offense of Barkley, KJ, Dan Majerle. You know, that was a stacked Suns team. I mean, Barkley was still in the prime of his career. I mean, that was an awesome Suns team.
A team that was better than the Bulls, probably.
A team that was probably better than the Bulls, given their level of depth. And just like,
and that's a hell of a way to
firepower.
Go.
He scores every point in the fourth quarter except for Paxson's three.
I mean, a lot of the reason that you would say that Jordan is the greatest player ever is because he went out on the highest note, pretty much that you could.
The Bulls, you know, Paxson hits the three with 2 seconds left, and as the Bulls are about to win the championship. In this, you know, classic finals battle of the Suns, one of the greatest series in NBA history, you know, a true epic in sports history, Jordan punctuates the moment by turning to Dan Majerle and screaming, "Fuck you, Majerle,"
which is something we've all wanted to say, which I think everybody that's ever met Dan Majerle has wanted to say, "Fuck you, Majerle."
And that just shows the class act that Michael Jordan was.
It's true. We miss him. Is there anything else about the season we got to talk about, Matthew, or are we wrapping it up?
I think we're wrapping it up. With no Michael Jordan this year, it's wide open, but we like Orlando.
We like Orlando.
Now you do what they told you. Now you do what they told you. Now you do what they told you.